The views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the hosts and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or positions of the Williams Media Group. Any content provided is of their opinion and are not intended to malign any religion, ethnic group, club, organization, company, individual, or anyone or anything.
Good afternoon. I'm Jay Curtis, and welcome to Garden Talk. I encourage you to stay with me, because coming up in just a moment, I'm going to be joined in studio by Sandy Williams from the Garfield County Master Gardeners. And we're going to be talking the yard, the garden, and so much more. It is Garden Talk, brought to you by The Garden House.
You want your landscaping to be beautiful, but you have no idea what plants or bushes to choose. No worries. Just stop by Garden House in Enid. You'll get the professional knowledge you need to make sure your yard is perfect. They're experts, and that's what they do. Get inspired at The Garden House.
And as I said, joined by Sandy Williams. Hi, how are you?
I'm good, Jay. You?
I am doing wonderfully. And before we get into your topic, we've seen a variety of weather over the past couple of weeks, mostly hot. A lot of it was really hot and humid, but a couple of milder days, a little bit of rain sprinkled in. So,
looking forward to the rest of the month. And yes, the summer solstice came in with kind of a yes, I'm here. Let's all get with it.
No doubt. It didn't ease itself into summer, at least temperature-wise here in Oklahoma. Just went bam. We were anywhere from 8 to 10 degrees above normal for June on many of those days. Now we are going to see a slight easing of the temperature, something a little more mild. You know, we'll be talking, seeing some low 90s is one thing. Upper 90s with the heat index and the triple digits is a whole different animal.
Yes, I can remember years ago, and here I go again on my tails.
No,
when
please.
We didn't have any kind of air conditioning, and my mom would open the south window about 4 or 5 inches. We'd hang a very wet, not sopping, tea towel in that window. Let the wind blow through it. Actually, it did lower the temperature in the house just a little bit. What, every 45 to a minute to an hour, we'd have to go back and sop that dish towel again just to keep it going. It worked.
Yeah, that certainly works best when it's when the humidity's fairly low and you're just looking for some relief. So, you know, it is Oklahoma. We're used to this. You never know what's going to be quite thrown your way weather-wise. And although we spend a lot of time talking about it, no need to complain.
It's one of the most versatile states in the Union because we can dip to the low, below zeros, and we can go to the high temperatures.
Absolutely, and we can have real long heat stretches for sure. You know, extended bitter cold, although we've experienced one here this last winter, is relatively rare. You know, we get our ice storms, it'll be real cold, but we're fortunate normally it lasts 3 or 4 days before it eases as opposed to 2 weeks.
One summer, went to Alaska, Fairbanks.
Okay.
105 it was the morning we got up. Everybody told us, because we're from Oklahoma, take that heat and go home.
Yeah,
we all kind of laugh.
Did you bring this with you? But,
yes.
Okay, that just seems...
That's very unusual, but they say it happens.
Yes, I mean, that's just odd to think of triple digits in Alaska. Something just doesn't compute there.
Yeah.
All right, well, we've talked about the weather enough, because like I said, there's no need to complain about it. It's going to do what it's going to do, so...
Here's something for everybody to think about, and I debated about this, and this is kind of a puzzle. So what key, and that's like you turn in the lock, or it could be something else, is the hardest to turn? You ready for the answer, Jay?
Okay, it's a riddle, and I'm not necessarily really good at
and
okay,
this,
hold on. What key is the hardest to turn? I'm sure the answer is going to be relatively obvious when you tell us. All right, I'm stumped.
donkey. four-legged that's animal. True. That's a good one, don't you think?
Yes, it is.
I thought you'd get a bang out of that. That's the reason why I thought I'd slip it in here.
Although there's a slight difference.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's all in accordance with the word, with the puzzle.
Well, no. I mean, there's a slight difference. Why do you think there's the saying, stubborn as a mule?
Mule. Yes. That's true.
So there you go.
There we go. All right, that's our fun thing for today.
All right.
Okay, here's about June. I don't know if you remember this from some of your early astronomy questions or whatever, if you ever learned it in school, but June is named for the Roman goddess of Juno. She is a patron of marriage and the well-being of women. And it's also from the Latin word Junivus, which means young people. So with that little bit of tidbit and information about the best about June, there are many things about June that we probably don't even think about here in Northwest Oklahoma, and we're in one of them right now that we think about every year, and that's harvest. So be careful out on those roads. Remember, there's big trucks and there's combines going from field to field. And there's little trucks hurrying here to get extra mechanics for those combines that break down. So just be aware and know that this too shall pass. Okay, here's another tidbit. When is the best time for us to go fishing? Well, it all has to do with the sun and the moon and the tides and weather that influences all of fish activity. For example, if you know the characteristics of a fish, they tend to feed more at sunrise and at sunset.
Right.
So that should be your first little inclination of when you should go fishing. And also during a full moon. So what have we got outside now? Everybody go and check tonight. When tides are higher than average, this is the best time for anybody to go fishing anywhere. However, most of us go fishing when we can get the time off. And hopefully sometimes they're ready there to bite and let us have a little bit of fun about catching something. But there are best times according to fishing lore. 1 hour before and 1 hour after high tides, and 1 hour before and 1 hour after low tides. The next one is during the morning rise, or after sunup for a spell, and the evening rise, which is just before sundown, or an hour or so after. During the rise and set of the moon is a good time. When the barometer is steady or on the rise, but even during stormy periods, the fish aren't going to give up feeding. The smartest fisherman will find just the right bait.
No doubt.
When there is a hatch of flies, caddisflies or mayflies commonly, this is a good time to go fishing.
Sure.
That's
because
bait.
Fish are going to be feeding on them when there's a large amount of them around.
Right, that's true. And when the breeze is from a westerly quarter rather than from the north or the east, when the water is still or rippled rather than during a wind. Wind has a tendency to move the water, so the fish probably wouldn't come up and bite, thinking something was on the surface to harm them in any which way, shape, or form.
That's why fishermen around here often go to, bins in rivers, coves, in
their
lake.
Their shelter.
Right. You're just looking for where the wind is having less effect because, let's face it, we're going to have wind.
That's part of Oklahoma's culture, not culture. It's just part of its environment.
No doubt.
To have wind. Okay, how do we measure a fish? Well, and estimate the weight. You ever thought about that? Measuring the fish from the tip of the nose to the tip of the tail. Then measure its girth at the thickest portion of its midsection. Multiply its length by the square of its girth. For flat-bodied fish like bass and salmon, divide this product by 800. For slender-bodied fish, like trout and northern pike, divide by 900. And this morning on the news, they had a paddlefish that they caught at Keystone. that was the size of a small child. I was so aghast that I thought, really, here in Oklahoma? But they normally are very hard to catch because they are at the bottom of your legs.
Right, but yeah. They do grow huge.
Oh, my goodness. I couldn't believe it when I saw the picture. But that's Oklahoma. Okay, now, we all like good lawns. But there's those species of things that invade our lawns. But here's a few little things that maybe can help you overcome that. Many lawn owners want opposing things, the perfect lawn and no chemicals. Well, the key to a chemical-free lawn is patience. Soil that's been chemically treated has lots of its natural occurring beneficial microorganisms that nourish healthy plants. Like any addict, it will suffer withdrawal symptoms in the case of a lawn, slow or patchy growth. So, here's some things. If you don't want to use chemicals on your lawn, the best defense is a good offense. It's a thin layer of compost, manure, and other organic materials that forestall the common weeds, bugs, and diseases. This is a healthy lawn. When problems do arise in the lawn, there are many natural alternatives to using herbicides, pesticides, and fertilizer. Along the way to becoming chemical-free, you may even find a virtue or two in some common weeds. And I'm going to mention two of them. One is crabgrass. We all hate crabgrass.
And it
rains.
Is certainly a factor around here.
It comes to the surface. You can't get rid of it. Well, I guess you can get rid of it. But it's there, and it's always like that little evil in your yard or in your flower bed. Oh, there's crabgrass. I got to pull him out. The weed that everyone loves to hate tops America's list of lawn complaints, and I can understand that. The best crabgrass preventer is a healthy, thick lawn and soil with a proper pH, and that's a pH of 7.0 through 7.5. This is, and then there is the perennial ryegrass is the best competition for crabgrass. It also provides some insect control. It emits, now I wasn't aware of this, but that stands to reason, a poison that gives some small damaging bugs the flu.
Huh.
I knew that there was a deterrent there, but I had forgotten what it was. Fertilizing is key and must be done in the spring and fall only. Crabgrass thrives in compact lawns. Aeration can help, but here's the thing. A mixture of 1 pint of hydrogen peroxide, plain old peroxide that you can get at any store, diluted to 3% per 100 square yards of lawn can help eradicate the pesky plant. Pretty simple.
I did not know that.
Pretty simple.
And just check when you buy your hydrogen peroxide, it'll already tell you what percent it is.
Yeah.
And then it just involves a little bit of basic math to get it at least close to dialed into that 3%.
And generally, for most lawns, a gallon, you have a gallon sprayer or a 2 gallon sprayer, will do the
trick. Because what you said, the cup. Yeah,
okay.
Because that would cover quite a bit.
The next.
All right, crabgrass. Enemy, lawn enemy number one.
And it's very prevalent. I work on it every day.
No doubt.
Okay, the next one is dandelions, but I don't like them either. I loved them when I was a kid because we'd collect them.
Sure.
And we'd blow the seeds as hard as we could blow them in places that they didn't need to be blown because they were pretty.
Okay, so it was you, Sandy, that spread them everywhere.
Yes, yes, yes. But, I was being a kid. And that was that was free entertainment.
No doubt.
That didn't cost anything. Your neighbors probably won't stand for a dandelion in their yards, but consider this. They make great wine. They are a natural diuretic, can be dried and made into coffee, and can be braided into lovely necklaces, which the Indian tribes, I think, used to do. You can eat their young leaves in salads, and I think we do this too, even today, because it is on the market. And they were brought to this land as an exotic green. So it's our forefathers that thought this green was necessary for their ability to change things in their diet. and say they brought them as a garden, as part of their garden. You know, it was planted.
Sure. Wow, I did not know that.
They're an excellent source of potassium, phosphorus, calcium, and vitamin A. So, not convinced? You want to get rid of your dandelions? Get a weeding fork.
Oh, they're telling you, you know, here's your best option with that. It's going to take a little bit of elbow grease. You're going to dig them up.
Okay, and here's something I didn't realize. And I guess when you read things, there's other things that you forget about this little pesky plant. But they do have a two-year life cycle. And when they're in the first year and appear as a basic foliage, you can dig them out with vengeance. And it's great exercise. If you miss some, they flower the next year. Dig them out before they reach that seed puffy white stage, and then you can let them go to seed. Or if you let them go to seed and spread their seed, you'll have to start the process all over again. So here, a thick, healthy lawn is again the best defense against dandelions, as it is for other common broadleaf weeds, such as Creeping Charlie or Creeping Jenny and quackgrass. Well, I have some, I don't know if it's called crackgrass or quaking grass.
Right.
And it's sea oats. And this is another thing that's a grass. It makes a beautiful area in a yard that is sparse with it. It likes low-keyed soil, but it makes a good background for flowers. The key to this, which a lot of people forget, is once it goes to seed and a seed head like wheat, you let it go for a while, but before fall gets here, you cut that seed head off and you won't have a spread. And that happened to me last summer. I let it go because I didn't get to it in time, and so I have pulled sea oats all spring.
Okay, so you ended up with a little more
than
you
I wanted.
Okay.
And a lot of people don't like it for that. Okay, those pesky insects. Oh, my goodness. Well, insecticides and pesticides are hardly ever necessary to control the most common lawn pests. The Japanese beetles and their adult counterparts are problems in the eastern part of the United States, and they can cause the lawns to turn yellow and die, but are very easy to control through non-poisonous means. In the grub stage of late spring and fall, beetles have two life cycles per season. You can spray the lawn with 2 teaspoons of your wife's dishwashing liquid and a gallon of water per 1,000 square feet. The grubs will surface and the birds will love you. You can spray it once a week until you don't see any more grubs. The adult beetle stage, handpick them, squish them, or drop them into a bucket of soapy water. Or simply just take them to your bird feeder and you'll be surprised how many birds you've made happy.
No doubt, you're providing a free meal.
Absolutely. So we've got one other thing, that thatchy lawn. Well, that can be a problem. It is a tightly intermingled layer of dead and decaying vegetation, and it's usually an unhealthy buildup of your organic matter, and it can cause brown patches in lawn, which indicates that you have a pH problem. So, or an imbalance with that. Thatch is a problem in lawns previously treated with chemicals, where the grass's ability naturally to destroy, to decay, has been destroyed. I got ahead of myself there. So dry thatch repels water, while wet thatch invites fungal disease. So you don't want this to be a problem in your yard. So the best control is the lawn's pH level should be raised. And one way to do this is just to rent a power rake. I don't know, probably just a regular old ground cultivator, garden cultivator would probably be your best bet around here. And inquire about this at your garden supply stores, which use rigid wire tines or steel blades that slice through that thatch.
Right.
and lift the debris and some soil to the surface to encourage natural decaying. Let the air get into it and let nature take itself. Save you some money.
Often become more of an issue, or has become more of an issue, since a lot of people have opted for a couple of different reasons to not necessarily catch their grass when they mow. Well, if that's going to be the case, it can be fine. You know, but you need to make sure that you have mulching blade or blades on your mower and that you keep them sharp.
That's a key to it, too.
To mow a little more often, so you're only giving it a trim every time, and it's smaller pieces that you're allowing to fall back into the yard.
That's good because that helps. That helps your lawn. But I guess there's that happy medium that you need to remember.
Well, often it can get started a little bit when every time every other time you go ahead and mow, you're not catching it. And it's longer, and you just leave that grass out there. If it's laying on top, the cuttings, and it's long enough that you know it's going to go through that stage, within a day or two it'll be yellowed, and you can see exactly where the lawnmower went. One time, that's not going to be a problem. But if you're doing that all season long,
it can't
break down fast enough.
All right.
And it starts building that thatch blanket.
Well, and I can truthfully say that the freeze that we had along with 11 inches of snow back in February froze out some of my fescue. And so I'm having to water a little more around those areas to get that fescue to start creeping over into those bare spots. So it's going to be a recovery summer for me in my backyard, which is okay.
And we've talked about it since the cold and the very hard freeze and everything that happened. It's a recovery summer for just about everyone with something in your yard, whether it's the yard, some of the shrubbery, and some of it ultimately may have to come out, as we talked about. But I've seen recovery of my hedges. Yeah, they're going to be a little more spotty for 1 year, but they're obviously going to ultimately recover.
Most of them will. Now, if this same hedge has the same dark brown cover come fall, and you look at the bottom and it's not coming out, you need to remove it.
No doubt.
And either replant or let the plant that's by it, if it's in a good shape or fairly good shape, let it do the recovery time to fill in. And that takes some time. So just as with everything, the best thing is to be patient.
That's one of the key, one of the key lessons. Not only do you understand the wonder of God's natural world through gardening, one of the major lessons you're going to be taught consistently is patience.
And what does he tell? What does he teach us sometimes?
That patience is a virtue.
Absolutely. So, therefore, my sermon for the morning.
There you go. Well, it's wonderful advice and good wisdom. So, there's a little bit of information that's tied kind of specifically to June or early summer. And we wanted to share with you before we ran out of June, so.
And it's just about gone. 4th of July is on our heels.
No doubt. We'll take the turn and make our way ultimately into the true dog days of summer. But we're going to be talking with you, Sandy.
On down the line.
On a regular basis. So we'll address situations that we might see, things that you've learned or can share.
Still continue to learn.
Out of your yard and garden, as I'm sure other people are experiencing this. So you'll want to join us every Saturday afternoon. It is Garden Talk brought to you by The Garden House. Sandy, as always, I appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you for listening to Garden Talk, brought to you by The Garden House.
You want your landscaping to be beautiful, but you have no idea what plants or bushes to choose. No worries. Just stop by Garden House in Enid. You'll get the professional knowledge you need to make sure your yard is perfect. They're experts, and that's what they do. Get inspired at The Garden House.